You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. Today on the show, I'm going to introduce you to Agatha Brewer. And what we talk about is how she made her dream of building her own business come true. So before we can talk about her building her own business, we have to talk about what she was doing before she did that. We talk about lots of things, including what were her ideas about entrepreneurship and business and working for somebody else. We talk about some of the things that might have been in the way. We talk a bit about what might have made her wait so long to make this decision. And we also talk about gardening, or in my case, my lack of gardening skills, or at least my lack of patience for growing things in a garden. We talk about the idea of a life checklist and a specific correct path for becoming successful and happy. This happens to be something that I think a lot of people experience. And so I think this is a great conversation. I think you're going to love it. So if you're ready, it's time. Let's do it. Agatha Brewer, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Are you ready for a fun chat?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so happy you're here. So first question that I have for you that I ask every single person that comes on the show, what part of the world do you call home?
I am in Atlanta, Georgia.
We're not,
not
too far away
from you.
Not too far away. And also, like Miami, known for its delightful traffic, I hear.
Oh, yeah. That's an understatement.
they make the same joke in Atlanta and in Miami and probably in many other places. It's like, you know, at all times, you know, you can be an hour in Miami, you can be an hour away from Miami at all times.
Very accurate.
I crack myself up. So in a second, we're going to start the actual interview. But before we do that, share with us a little bit about yourself. What is something that you do to take care of yourself that somebody might consider self-care?
Well, the obvious one that I've been doing for, I think, over 20 years now is meditation. But I know that's been talked about a lot. So I'm actually going to go with something else. And that is gardening. That is my other form of meditation. And that's something I've been doing, I would say, since pre-COVID, before it got popular. And
very
my mom
nice.
Kind of introduced me to that as a young child. We had a garden for most of the time growing up. And now I'm a little obsessed with it. I have, I somehow think it's a good idea to grow tomatoes here in Atlanta. And it is very hard to do that organically without spraying them with a bunch of crap. But I have all kinds of things in my garden. And that's my other form of meditation, where I get to be grounded and get to be, you know, have my hands in the dirt and smell the fresh air and feel the sunshine. And it's definitely something that keeps me calm and grounded when, you know, the world is crazy and not calm and grounded.
Boy, I love that. I love that. So you grow tomatoes. What else do you grow?
Kale. What do I have in the garden right now? Radishes, lettuces, berries is a new one that I've been doing.
Ooh.
I have some like thornless blackberries, some raspberries, all kinds of things. It depends on the season. So I, you know, do brassicas in the fall, and then now it's starting to be, you know, more summertime. So I'm doing like peppers, and I even have a papaya tree, which was kind of like a mistake that just happened. Like it grew out of my compost because I ate one papaya last year, and now I'm trying to see if that'll work. I've got it outside right now. So
fantastic.
Because I'm not in Florida, so we don't have the, you know, nice warm winter temperatures.
Papaya grows here. It's one of the few things. So we grow, I'm so far south. Like, so Miami is so far south that if you look at the gardening chart and the zones, we're in our very own zone because we're sandy and tropical, right? We're really, really hot. So we do, we grow papaya, we grow mango, citrus fruit can grow here, green beans, and that is kind of it. Dragon fruit, like that is like we grow the avocado, and that is kind of it. Like everything else doesn't really grow. Like you were saying, like it's hard to grow things without fungicide and stuff like that. So
yeah.
many years ago, I had a friend in from out of town who wanted to do berry picking. So we found a strawberry field to pick. And my friend was like, "Hey, are these organic?" And the guy was like, "Sure." And she was like, "Do you spray fungicide?" And he's like, "Yes." And she's like, "Oh, they're not organic." He's like, "If we didn't spray fungicide, this would be a puddle of strawberry goo." Like these need help growing here. We
Oh.
tried to grow. I am not a gardener. I have many, many talents. That is not one of them. But when my kids are little, I did try a garden, and it has, there's many, many hilarious stories of Amy failing in the garden. One of our favorites is that I just absolutely could not believe that the carrots were not done because they grow like this enormous thing at the top, and I just couldn't resist the pressure. And so I pulled them up, and they're little tiny itty bitty. Oh my
that.
God, so many times, so many times. So we finally gave up. Anyway, all right. So gardening, gardening. The topic of the day, not gardening or my failures of gardening. The topic is you giving yourself permission to make your dream of owning your own business a reality. That's a great topic. Are you ready for that?
Yes, I
All right, let's
am.
do it. Let's back up because I'm curious about this, given the information you shared with me. Like, tell me more about how long you had this dream. Like, is this something that you wanted since you were a young kid, or is this something that grew over time? Tell me a little bit about like when it started and how long you had this dream.
It's been a long time. I don't think I necessarily wanted it when I was like a little kid, because I, as most Americans, or at least the ones that I've encountered, I followed the script that we all follow, that you have to climb the corporate ladder and do all the things to be successful. So I didn't really have like an entrepreneurial mindset when I was really young. I mean, in little ways I did, because I remember as a kid, I had like this little, I would call it a store, where I sold things. I didn't really sell them. It was pretend, you know. My sister and I, we had like these shelves, and we lined them with things that we owned that we were quote unquote selling. And we had a little cash box, and our friend bought, like quote unquote, bought them from us. And then I remember in high school, I had like a little bead related jewelry business,
Sure.
but it wasn't, you know, looking back, it wasn't really a business. It was more of a hobby. But we went to like a craft fair in Princeton. So, I mean, there was a little bit of like entrepreneurship. But I think growing up, I never really had the belief that a business could be successful
Okay.
as, you know, by itself without something else. Like, unless you were like super entrepreneurial and you had that like in you. I just kind of followed the normal script that everybody was following. So it wasn't until, and I also should say that I grew up in a pretty, not really a pressure cooker environment, but a little bit. Like my high school that I went to was very, and still is very competitive. It's a public school, but one of the best public schools in the state, even to this day. I grew up right outside of Princeton. There were a lot of expectations for people to basically go to college, get a good job, climb the corporate ladder. And that was the conditioning that I had growing up. And also, on top of that, my parents are both immigrants. So I had that on top of the fact that, you know, everybody in my school was striving for perfection and striving for that. So my entrepreneurial ideas, I think, started coming later when I was, let's say, a little bit sick of corporate America.
All right, that was where my question. All right, so you grew up near Princeton, New Jersey, which is a beautiful part of the world. I actually have family who lived for about 10 years in Cranberry, New Jersey, and which is one of the towns very close to that. The thing that's funny about that is that I grew up in New York City. They were living in New York City. They overcorrected after 9/11 and bought a historic house. They went from renting in New York City to owning a historic house in Cranberry, New Jersey, which is a city the size, it's tiny. It's like an adorable, very small street. It was a massive, massive adjustment for them, but very, very, very pretty place, but really academically motivated. Really academically motivated. Yeah. So you're as a kid, nobody in your family was a freelancer or an entrepreneur. You did not have somebody who was representing that for you.
So I will say I did, but what I saw was the hardship of entrepreneurship. So my
Okay.
mom and dad are architects, and they started their own business. But when I was a kid, you know, my dad kind of had this business, but then they also did corporate. So I saw both sides, and I
Yeah.
only really heard like, I didn't necessarily hear the positive things about it, because architecture is freaking hard. Even, you know,
Yep.
architecture itself is hard, but then finding clients as an architect is also hard. And that they climb the corporate ladder. And then the times when I saw, you know, them as a kid and as a teenager, I just saw the struggle. I saw, you know, how hard it was. Then also English is not their first language, so they're trying to market, in a language that isn't even their first language, and they're good at it, so it's fine. But that wasn't the part of the business that they loved. They loved the architecture part of it, and they were really good at that. And then later in life, I saw them also have a business, but then kind of go back and forth between corporate and then owning a business. And then later I did see them succeed in that and become very successful, but I always heard, how hard marketing was, because that was what I did in my career until I launched my business. And for me, I wouldn't say marketing is easy, because it's still a complex field and it's still constantly changing and things like that. But it was something that I was comfortable with. So like, I still remember like helping them write their website or edit it and things like that. And so, I saw not only the positive things about entrepreneurship, but also the hard side of it growing up. So I think that kind of ingrained in me that, this isn't easy. And I also heard from my family, like, don't be an architect. Like, that was the one piece of career advice. And my dad would always say, own your own business, do your own thing. But I saw more than just, the successes. I saw all of it.
Absolutely. Do you think that you, because it was happening inside your house and these were your parents, that there was a chance that you were seeing the bad things because those you were in the middle of it? People don't often celebrate they weren't necessarily sharing with you the wins, but you were seeing the stress because you were behind the scenes. You were like in the pressure cooker. So, what is do you, can I ask like where were your parents from? What was the language they speak?
Polish.
Polish. Very nice. All right. And so then were they adults when they moved to the United States, or did they come
They
as kids?
were. They were, but I mean, I grew up here for the most part. I never lived in Poland. But I was here, I think, when I was 2 or 3. And so most of my whole life, it was them trying to learn English through us,
Yeah.
and all of that. But then still, like, I've never really felt like truly American. I've never felt truly Polish because I never lived there. I know the language a little bit, but I'm still like a beginner Polish speaker. So it was always like them trying to get used to this culture, and still having some ties to Poland as well, obviously.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So they learned English predominantly here as adults, which is.
Yeah, I mean, I think they started before they came here. I even have a book that they got when they like immigrated, of like, vocab, of important words you need to know when you come to America, like how to find a job and like some basic stuff like that.
Very impressive. Very impressive. It was off the agenda to talk about that, but there definitely is when we talk about life goals and culture and jobs and like a checklist of what we're expected to do. There are some things that come up in first generation children of immigrants because the experience is potentially common but unique and different. So just an interesting thread. So your parents actually had this experience. So you saw that for better or for worse, and you were busy checking off your checklist as you saw it. At the same time, it turns out that your father was like, hey, don't do what I did, but definitely have your own business. So if it sounds a little bit like you had a lot of maybe slightly differing advice from all over the place.
Yeah, it was a little contradictory. But I mean, now as an adult, I've seen that they have been very successful, but it was still hard. I mean, like, when the recession happened, they were impacted by that because their architecture is also like marketing is the first place to go and get laid off. Architecture is where budgets are cut. Buildings aren't being built when we have a recession. They had to go to Europe to deal with that and, work for a company and then eventually open their own there. So, I mean, yeah, I've seen both sides.
Did you think about, despite your dad's advice to never ever be an architect, did you consider it? Did the
No.
love of, okay,
No,
so.
it was ingrained in me. The funny thing is, my sister became an architect. She went to Cornell. She did the thing. And then soon after she started, a couple of years later, she just couldn't, she just hated it. And so she went and, created her own story. And so there was a little bit of that too. We're like, oh, she can do it. So, I mean, she's not a business owner, but she's a lot more, she has been a lot more entrepreneurial in the past, and she didn't follow the typical, American thing.
So let's talk about what you're in. When you talk about that, let's talk about what you were seeing as, if I went back and talked to you when you were a junior in high school or a senior in high school, what did you see as the checklist? Like, what was the path that you felt like, hey, if I follow this, this is going to work. And these are the things I need to do in order to create a good, successful life for myself. What was on your list?
Yeah, the main thing was around career. It was, you're going to be, you didn't necessarily have to be a doctor or a lawyer, but you had to do something that, you know, gave you a little bit of prestige, or you had to climb the corporate ladder in the sense of get a good job. And for me, because I was close to New York, typically people in my area went to New York City. I went to New York City, found my first job, worked for a pretty demanding person, hated it, and then, you know, kept finding other jobs there. Then the recession hit. I moved to Atlanta. That industry I was in completely collapsed, you know. So I'm going into that story, but you know, the things were, get a good job, find yourself a family, you know, have kids, have a white picket fence. The typical American, you know, dream is what I was following, because that is what I heard. And it wasn't just from my parents. It's from every movie you ever watch. It's from every book you ever read. It's like, you know, it's cultural conditioning here in America, but also in other places. I've coached people in other parts of the world, and they also feel that pressure. It depends where they're at. And so you follow that, and then eventually you keep following that, and you ask yourself, am I really truly happy doing this? Like, once you've reached some level of success, that's when I started questioning, okay, do I really want to be doing this forever? Do I see myself, you know, 50 years old walking into a corporate office building in a cubicle, or now, you know, it's open floor plan, but is that my version of success? And eventually I said, no, it's not.
So did you, I'm going to ask a little bit about how you follow the path. And before I do that, I just want to clarify that, like, I am at the point in my existence, in my opinion, where I don't think there's a right or wrong path to follow, but I like to talk to people about the path they followed, because it can feel like if you step off whatever you see as the path that you've done something wrong. And so did you follow the traditional education path? Like, did you graduate from high school and then go to university or higher education or some sort of trade school to learn about marketing? Like, how did you do this?
Yeah, I went to Rutgers. So yeah, I followed the traditional path. I went to New Brunswick, you know, I studied communications. I tried to apply to the business school, but I am not great in math. So that was a problem for me. I took some like micro macroeconomics courses, realized like, this is not, if this is like the prerequisite, then what am I doing here? So I, you know, they, at the time, I wasn't really able to take electives in business. So and of course, why do I want to do a business degree? Because that means success, an MBA, right? Or any kind of business. So I did the closest thing I could, and I did communications and psychology as my minor. And, you know, I probably could have double majored, but I wanted to finish on time. So I that's the start of the schooling that I had. And then, of course, you know, while I was in school, my last year, I interned in the city in New York. I would take the train in every week, and I worked at a marketing agency. And that was my first. And I had even, of course, done multiple internships before that in marketing at different marketing agencies in Princeton. So I kind of already knew what that was. And that was my, you know, beginning. I got a great recommendation from them that landed me my first job at a big marketing agency, part of IPG in New York.
All right. So you knew, so studying communication, which is a really broad thing, but you were attracted to marketing and business and the transactional side. All right. Very good. And so you did this. You worked in marketing, digital marketing, and other forms of marketing for close to 20 years. Whenever I talk to people about career change, I like to talk to them about some of the good, because like, it's real easy to throw everything under the bus and be like, this sucked. Like, I hated all of it. Yeah. But if you do something for 20 years, there were probably things that you really, truly did enjoy and love. So what were things that you liked about marketing, and even things that you felt were important or helpful or you enjoyed about being an employee?
Yeah, I mean, of course, like, I don't want to be completely negative about everything, because obviously, why did I stay in it for so long? There must have been something that I enjoyed. And for me, it was always being creative. Anytime I could be creative, because I wasn't an architect, but I have an artistic side, and I like to draw and paint and play music. So there's part of me that wants to create. And so anytime I could create something, like even a marketing plan, like I know that sounds kind of boring, but when you create a marketing plan, then in order to execute that marketing plan, you have different strategies and you have different marketing programs that you create. And for me, that was really cool because I literally built something from the ground up. And even before I went into like technology marketing, which is what I've done, for the last, I don't know, 12 years in Atlanta, I was doing event management, and you're literally building something from the ground up. It's like, we created, I worked for one of the largest food festivals in New York City. And even you might be familiar, this is Sobey Wine and Food was a sister festival of the festival I did in New York, or when I first worked there. And you literally build something from the ground up, and it doesn't exist a few days before or a few weeks before. And then you 60,000 people arrive and you put on this show, and then you break it all down. And so marketing is like that. So anytime I could do something like that, or even in my last role in marketing, I was a senior marketing programs manager, and I was able to, have a vision and then make that happen. Or when I was able to lead a team, that was amazing because I think even before getting the training to be a coach, I was a good mentor and I knew how to mentor people who maybe were a little bit more green than me, but I helped them, kind of step into their own power as an employee of mine or as somebody on my team and believe in themselves and things like that. So those were things that I always enjoyed. Another one was, this one was a little harder for me because I am not a natural public speaker, so it was like scary for me. But when I would get up and present in front of my entire company, like it scared the, I don't know if I can curse on the show, but
Yes,
like
you can.
scared the shit out of me. I would be shaking when I was like presenting, but other people didn't necessarily see that. They saw that I knew my stuff and I knew my marketing plan and I knew like the strategy that I had come up with. So, I mean, there were definitely lots of times that I felt fulfilled and happy in corporate, but then there were other times where I was like, yeah, but this isn't my own thing that I'm building. This isn't, I don't feel fully aligned with what this company is trying to do, or even any bit aligned in some of the companies I worked for. I was like, is this going to matter in 20 years? No, it's not, So I had kind of both sides of it. There were definitely, and also the marketing skills that I learned, I mean, I use them to this day in my business. And it's also what I coach people on. So clearly I need to know marketing in order to be able to work in the niche that I do. So, I mean, if I didn't have that marketing background, my business would be way harder for me to be able to, launch my own podcast, create my own website, do all the things you have to do in marketing, be able to market myself and coach people on that. So, I mean, there's tons of, it was preparing me for what I do now.
Very nice. So you liked the things you were doing, the tasks you were doing, the projects you had, the creating of events and plans and those things. You were an employee, which you set out to be. That was the plan. You were following your own path and the path that you saw for other people. But you had like maybe your dad's voice in the back of your head, like you want to build your own thing. And how does this begin to shift in your mind where you begin? Like, how does this become? Does it begin to grow? Like, is it something that's always in the back of your mind? Are there things that are happening to you as an experience? I know that there it looks like there was a regional shift. You moved from New York to Atlanta, which sometimes is a great move because if you can end up with a New York City salary in Atlanta, Georgia, that's a good thing to have. But yeah, so what, how did this begin to change in your mind that you were like, I don't want to work for other people. I want to work on building my own thing.
Yeah, and for me, like I'll be fully transparent, there was a lot of hardship that led me to that decision, and it was mostly around being laid off. Like the shift from New York to Atlanta was the recession in 2008, 2009. I lost my job, the industry I was in, which was event management and specifically luxury event management. So like high ticket kind of events that people would pay hundreds of dollars or even thousands to
Thousands of dollars.
attend.
Yeah. Tickets for South Beach Food and Wine are not necessarily hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, I mean, we did the New York version of that, but we went to Sobey and I saw what that was as kind of research for that event. So, I mean, that industry crumbled. And so I tried to find more work in that area in New York, but I was also living paycheck to paycheck. This was my early 20s or mid 20s. And so I was like, And they tried to hire me. Like the funny thing is with all the layoffs that I've had, like most of the companies, or at least half of them, have tried to hire me back. And they said something like that. They said, maybe if you wait till January, we'll have the budget to have you back. But I'm like, yeah, but I got to pay rent. And so I did some freelance stuff and events. And then eventually I moved down here to Atlanta and I've been here for 15 years. But then, you know, throughout that time, and when I came to Atlanta, there was no such thing as event management. Maybe there was, but I had a hard time finding something comparable because that at the time was like my dream job. I love food. I love hosting events. I love, you know, having people over doing potlucks, things like that. So that was in my DNA, you know. But I came here and that didn't really exist. I tried to find jobs in that area, but I didn't get very far. And so then, of course, I went into software tech marketing, which is very popular here. And it's a little tech hub here in Atlanta and specifically close to where I live. And so then I found a job that was like polar opposite of what I did in New York. And like, to me, looking back, like, it was super boring. I mean, I learned marketing. I learned real marketing outside of events. And I learned the digital side of things. And, you know, that was fine. Then I got laid off from that job after a few years working my butt off. And that, you know, kept repeating. And even that job, they tried to hire me back once they found out that it was through an acquisition and the company that acquired the company I was at. Didn't realize what I was actually doing. And they thought of me as a number on a spreadsheet. And when they realized what I was doing, they tried to hire me back. And at that time I said, no, like I'm not going to go back to a company that like was this, you know, short-sighted and sorry. And at the same time I had literally like, it was the same day that, or same week probably, that I accepted another position at another company. And so every time I got laid off, it felt like, you know, something I had done wrong, or that okay. It was my fault, or I screwed something up, when in reality that wasn't the case. But that's what it feels like when you, out of nowhere, it feels like, you know, the world shifts underneath your feet and you no longer have stability. And then the next job, that's actually where I started to think about, okay, can I do something else? And I'd never followed it. But at that job, that's when I got promoted to become a director of marketing at the age of 30, which was scary because I had some imposter syndrome. I had like some doubt about my own skills. I was leading a team and I went to a personal development retreat for a few days. Actually in Florida. And at that retreat, it was about designing your life, designing what could be possible for you. And I got to see what coaching actually is, because it was being led by a coach. And I remember I have a journal actually behind me where I wrote the words life coach question mark. And that was the first time where I was like, maybe I could do something else, because I had this feeling like, okay, I'm already at the highest level that I could be, or pretty high at this age as a director in charge of the entire company's marketing plan and team.
Yeah.
But I still don't feel happy. And I still feel all this stress and I still feel all, you know, these deadlines and, you know, there were numbers we had to hit every quarter and like, that didn't feel good to me. And I still felt like disconnected from their purpose, the company's purpose. Their values didn't fully align in that area. So that was really, that retreat is where I started to think about different possibilities. And then 7 years later is when I finally decided, in 2019 is when I finally decided, okay, let's actually do this and let's get the training to become a coach.
So very, very nice. All right. So when you're a kid, you see your parents struggling with what you understand is their business. You take away from that entrepreneurship is risky. Your father at the same time is giving you an opposite message, which is that it's important that you build something that is all yours. You lay out your path, which my issue with us, this is like a nonsense statement, but the issue that I have now as an adult who's been around kids for a lot of time, the issue with teaching our kids that there is a singular path, that if you do this the right way, that the good results will happen, is that internalization that when it doesn't go, when you don't get rewarded, that you must have done something wrong. And I'm not actually sure if kids are getting that same message. I have a kid who will start, the youngest of my kids will start college in the fall. And one of the tours we did in the past year, the person in admissions said that they expect that kids his age, adults when they're adults that they will have as many as 30 different jobs in their lifetime.
Wow.
So, hopefully they're not going to internalize it, because one of the stories that I really like to show people is that there are a million different paths. Like, you feel like you're stepping off the one and only true path, which was never there to begin with. And so it's like this message inside your head. But one of the things I love about this is that you were like, entrepreneurship is risky. And then you were like, I'm being an employee and I don't like the stress and the deadlines and the pressure. And then you're like, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to start my own business where the only person, I'm going to make deadlines for myself and there's no one else to blame. Like, so I do, I'm chuckling inside and a little bit outside as I think about that mental loop, not in judgment, but just because it is a little bit hilarious. It's like, well, when I'm in charge, none of this will happen. And then you get to be in charge and you're the only person. You're like, wow, there's no one else to ask or blame.
But I've always been good at like directing myself, even as an employee. Like I've always been good with autonomy, and I've always been good with, my boss didn't have to breathe down my neck to get me to do something. I was always very driven. So I think, there's definitely more uncertainty as an entrepreneur. Like, let's be real. But like the certainty that you think you have in corporate, because I've been laid off and I've felt that pain. It's not really certainty. It's not really financial security, because like you think you're going to be making X amount of money in your next paycheck, and then that gets ripped out from under you. So you feel that enough times, and then you realize that was never really certainty. That was you're just a part of like the puzzle for them. And if they don't think that you're the right piece, then it's time for you to go,
No, and especially in technology, there's a cycle. There's a development cycle where they invest in staff and then they have to cut back while they do, develop new things. And that's something that you don't know and nobody tells you until you're in it, because it doesn't do them any good to let you know that that's the path. But yeah, no, 100%. Okay, so you have this idea, you go to a personal development conference, you see a coach, you're like, you write it down. Life coach? Question mark. All right. So you shared, you may have already answered this, but I'm going to touch base on it, because you shared that in your opinion, there were multiple signs from the universe that it was time to leave. And this, I guess, this is in that 7-year window. And you say you finally listened. What were some of the signs that you were seeing? What were some of the things that were happening around you that were like, this is a change needs to be made?
Yeah, I mean, the one I've mentioned already, the layoffs. I mean, I've been laid off from every job I've ever had, which is like hard to say out loud, but that is the truth. After working what I thought was my butt off, like for that company, feeling super like loyal to them and even loyal to a fault, where I was unhappy in a lot of the times that I was working for them, but I still didn't make a change. Even, I tried to advocate for myself and I tried to say, I want to do something else in my role, or I want to manage a team, or just being kind of like ignored, to put it lightly, at some of the companies, not all of them, but some of them, I felt like I was doing a job that was below me because I had already done that for many years, and I had managed teams, and then I was asked to be a sole contributor again, and I was like, wait, what? Like, I'm better than this, and yet I still had to do that and continue to be okay with that when I knew I could make a bigger impact on the company, managing a team and doing more strategic work and things like that. So that was a sign. Another sign was just constant health challenges that like felt like they came out of nowhere, but like had been brewing, and dealing with chronic health conditions and things that came up that were, I was like, where did this come from? And yeah, it came from the fact that I felt unhappy in the work that I was doing. Another one was feeling like I had to like put on a face when I was at work and have this different identity than my true identity. And like when I would have, for example, host a potluck and had friends over, and I was actually honest with them about what I felt like, I always constantly felt like I was just complaining about work instead of like doing something about it and changing. And what I, in my like paradigm then, I thought the change was just find a different job, just continue on that path, find another job in marketing, because it's not that I hate marketing, it's just marketing in something that I don't necessarily believe in fully, And so I kept thinking, well, maybe I'll just find a job that's closer related to like food marketing or things like that. And that never solved the problem, because the problem wasn't that, it was I didn't want to be in corporate, and I actually wanted to create my own thing.
All right. So you were not aligned with the mission of the companies that you were working for. You didn't feel valued and heard in the jobs. It sounds like you were masking, which is what we call when people develop a persona, which is not always a bad thing to do, right? Like, so if you are a if you are a professional and you have a professional demeanor, and then at home you have a goofy demeanor, those two things can coexist. But when you're creating a personality that you feel uncomfortable with on purpose because you're going to work, that's that I think everybody can understand that can grate on you. Okay, so you made this change 2019, is that correct?
That's when I decided to become trained as a coach. So it took
Okay.
me about a year to get that training. And then I did even more training and, to the point where I'm now ICF like certified. So a lot of training. But yeah, that's when I first started. It was the end of 2019.
And so 7 years before that, you go to or roughly, you go to an event with a coach. In between this, had you been parts of lots of like coaching, we call them coaching containers, but like groups and working with sort of checking out the industry and, being a consumer of coaching before you were like, hey, I think I have the skills.
I don't think so. I mean, I've always been into personal development. So I've
Okay.
read a lot of books. I've done a lot of work on myself for various reasons. I've always I've meditated for 20 years. So I had a little bit of that. There's definitely books that influenced me. One called The Firestarter Sessions, Danielle Laporte.
Yep.
I've read, I can't remember the name, The Web That Has No Weaver, certain books that are quarter life crisis. So I
Sure.
felt these things even when I was in New York, and I felt always this longing that something felt a little off, but I never really pursued anything to change that. I will say that because of the health challenges that I experienced, I did get training to become a health coach that I never went and did anything with besides, create a website. And at the time, 2011, I went to a school called IIN, for integrative nutrition, and it was great. But then, I had no idea of how to start a business around it. The health coach training was wonderful, but they didn't, teach us how to actually build a business. So I launched a website, and then thinking, stupidly that or naively that that was all I had to do. I didn't have to actually go and market it and bring people to that site. So that never really went anywhere. But that was my first kind of foray into, I guess, real entrepreneurship. And another thing around the health issues is I did this program called DNRS, which is a dynamic neural retraining system where you rewire your brain. And I was rewiring my brain around the health issues that I had had for most of my life. But in the process of doing that program for almost 3 years, and this was really the trigger that made me decide to, become a life coach, I learned what a limiting belief was. And I really
Okay.
understood the power of changing your beliefs, changing your story. And I was doing it around my health, but it also opened doors for, okay, what is the story I'm telling about myself, about my career? What is the story I'm telling about myself, about what is possible for me? And that's when I really started digging in and saying, why can't I have a job and be an entrepreneur? Why can't I do something that I'm really passionate about? Or because I, in the process of learning how to coach, you coach people and you get to help them. So even as an employee, I got to see that, and I felt so much joy and so much connection and fulfillment in a coaching session that I didn't feel in corporate. The only times I felt that in corporate was when I was mentoring other people. And there, I wasn't even trained as a coach at that time when I was mentoring those people, but I felt it a little bit. I felt the transformation that somebody could have. So I think that program really helped me see that. Maybe the story I've been telling myself my whole life, or good portion of it, of what I'm capable of, my future, what my future could look like, maybe that's not true, and maybe I can do something else.
Yeah. So, like the idea of a limiting belief is something that is out there in the coaching, self-help, personal development space. And it's something that if you were to rewind to a version of Amy, like 15 years ago, me, I would have been like, people keep saying this and I don't get exactly what it is. And so, because it's like a concept that people present as like everybody already knows what this is. But let's talk about it, because if you're holding the idea, like, so Agatha, who's a recent college grad, loves producing events. If you've got the idea that you need to be an employee and you need to be a professional from your family, that limits you from chasing a dream and anything else, because the two things can't hold the same space, right? So if you believe that gravity always works, then that prevents the idea that you are going to float off the planet. So that's how limiting beliefs get in our way. And one of the things that makes limiting beliefs tricky is that we don't see them until somebody shoves them in our face. And so that is, so you were unraveling this for yourself and realizing that the story you'd been told, the story you'd constructed for yourself about what your life needed to be and who you were in this life could go a different direction. And what it does is you form your own business. Okay, so is the business that you started, it's life coaching, is it also related to marketing? Like, who tell in a minute we're going to do the final questions, but tell us what it is that you do. You gathered all of these coaching certificates. I love the fact that you were not a coaching client at that time. You just were like, I'm going to go get certified. Click. Yeah. So what is it that you do these days?
So now I'm a business coach and business and marketing coach, but that actually came through becoming a life coach, where in order to even get trained and then certified as a coach, I had to get over 100 coaching hours in order to even get the certifications that I was going after. And what started to happen, like my first coach or first client was actually a life coaching client. It was totally different than what I do now. But it kind of organically happened that people started coming to me. Basically, my peer coaches started coming to me around marketing, because they knew I had this corporate marketing background. And that was when I had 15 years of it. Now I have 19 years of it. So they knew that about me because they saw me in our, courses together. And then they said, okay, let me work with her. And so it kind of organically happened that I became a business coach, but it also, I did some questioning of my own, and I realized that this is actually something I enjoy doing, because it's that creativity, it's that ideation stage of a business that I really help people with, like the vision part of it, and then helping them implement that, which is like my bread and butter, was what I did in marketing, is implementing a strategy. And so, yeah, now what I do is I help people launch their business, and
Okay.
specifically women, specifically solopreneurs and service-based business owners. So other people kind of like me, coaches, consultants, and a little bit broader than that, but people who are providing a service, and helping them really clarify their marketing and what actually they enjoy, instead of following, somebody else's advice, but actually helping them tune into their own intuition around what they actually enjoy doing in their marketing, so that they show up and do it. And
Yes, because if you,
then
it's a very, very short road. If you fill out your daily to-do list with things that you hate doing, you're not going to do it very long. So that is very, very true. So one of the things that I love about this is that young Agatha considered going to business school, and turned away because economics was not her thing, which I think we now call economics humanities. So I don't know where it falls into the scheme of things. My one economics class was absolutely economics for people who never plan on taking any other economics ever again. So I can't speak to that in any sort of thing. But so now you do coaching, mindset coaching, and business and marketing coaching for service solopreneurs. Service. All right, very good. You have a special offer for the audience, which is Launch with Ease. This is a coaching program. And if you sign up with the link in the show notes, the link special for the audience, you get a bonus 60-minute session with Agatha herself. And it's good for a long time. You have all the way through February of 2026. So the link for that is in the show notes, and it's everywhere you are. And the easiest way to get that is to be a subscriber to the Imperfect Adulting community, email community, because then I zip it straight into your email box and you can click on it. You don't have to write it down or remember any of the things. I want to thank you, Agatha, very much for that very generous offer. It's really, really good. I thank you for sharing the story. Are you ready, Agatha, for the final three fun questions?
I hope so. Yeah,
Yes, you are. You are. These are just for fun. Don't feel pressure. All right, very good. Are you an early morning person or a night owl?
I'm kind of a in the middle of the day person. I realized that after I left corporate that, well, actually I knew I was never really a morning person, but now I kind of ease into my day. I do some meditation. I have a nice breakfast. I chill a little bit, and then I start my day. Whereas before it was, 8 a.m. start.
Very, very nice. When I wrote it out, it's so funny because it's like I try not to give like a million different choices, but I'm like, there are more options in here. You could be like an evening person or a midday person. There's other things. But so there, that was a very good answer. Okay, so here we go. We're doing this on a screen. We're talking like remotely. Do you monitor your personal screen time? And if so, do you think, I'm going to give you the Goldilocks options. Do you think that you are on your screens too much, too little, or just the right amount?
Yeah, I monitor it. I mean, I'm not like crazy about it, but I have some things where my phone will tell me if I've been in an app for X amount of time, and you've hit your limit for the day. But I think it's something we all need to be aware of, especially as entrepreneurs. And it's the reason I kind of don't do social media as much anymore, because it was taking away a lot of my energy just being on, I won't name the apps, but you can imagine.
Yeah, no.
Because I got, I would say to myself that I was, on there for marketing purposes, but then I'd get sucked in. So I do monitor the time that I spend on devices, which is why I love gardening, because there are no devices in gardening.
That is beautiful. I have gone through seasons of monitoring and seasons of not monitoring, but it is funny when you're doing promotion and business oriented things, and you, if you know some, you don't require, you don't need social media, but if you do those things, so then I would go through seasons where I'd have everything blocked off all the time, and I was constantly just breaking it. I was like, because I was the person who set it up and also the person who had the password, so I could just be like, well, not today, you know. Every day except not today. So all right, so when is the last time you saw a movie in a movie theater, and do you remember what it was?
Movie in a movie theater. Oh God. I think we just recently went, but I can't remember what the heck we saw. Usually they're movies that my husband wants to see, because he loves movies and movie theaters. And man, I can't. Oh, this is
It had
bad.
such an impression on you that you totally remember it. The
They're
experience was
usually
so mind
sci-fi.
I was
They're
like
usually sci-fi. We also watch a lot of shows. Man, I'm blanking. This is bad. But I did just see a movie in Polish. It was not at a movie theater, but there's this New York Polish Film Festival. So I'm
okay.
like trying to. I'm going to Poland in 2 weeks to see my family. They live there now. But I'm trying to brush up a little on my Polish. So I saw this movie from like 1958 by this very famous Polish director, Andrzej Wajda. So yeah, I guess,
That's
man, that's
very cool.
embarrassing. I can't remember the movie. I think we went like
No.
last week and I can't remember the movie we
Well,
saw.
it was not Mission Impossible. Mission Impossible is just
No.
out. So, okay, it wasn't Mission Impossible. So, very good. So,
Oh,
the.
it was a Marvel movie.
Oh, you saw the. That's the new one, which is called the something, the Thunderbolts, the
Yeah, the
Thunder.
Thunderbolts. Yeah. Clearly my choice of movie, right?
It works. Was it was entertaining. The Avengers movies are
Okay.
entertaining.
Yeah,
They're, the
yeah.
everything explodes and there's magic and all those things. Absolutely. So your parents have moved back to Poland.
Yeah.
Oh,
After 30
spectacular.
years, they decided, no, let's not do the American dream anymore. Let's go back to our home country, which is the funniest part of all of this.
That is so they're far away. That's a
Yeah.
different strain on your life. So the and so that is really, do you have other family, extended family in Poland?
I have a twin sister who lives in Warsaw, not with them, but close to them. Yeah.
That is spectacular. Well, I hope you have a wonderful trip.
Thank
It
you.
is, and that's a great way to watch the movies to immerse yourself, and pick up, try and remember all the things. Because I assume that your parents spoke to you in Polish when you were a kid.
They did, but they were also trying to learn English, so I never learned it the way I would like to
Oh,
know
so
it.
it wasn't like
Yeah.
Polish was at home and English was
Well, there
outside.
was, but we usually spoke back in English, which I wish I hadn't done that, but I'm learning, I'm trying. My
I'm
sister's
sure you're
lived
doing a
there.
great job.
Yeah, my sister's lived there for 15 years, so I'm jealous of her because her Polish is like way better than mine. But I have a good understanding of it, thankfully. So it's just my speaking that's a little challenging.
I respect that, and I hope you have a wonderful trip and all of those things. That's it, Agatha Brewer. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for this opportunity and amazing show that you have, that you really go into people's stories and you don't gloss over the hard stuff.
Oh, thank you for that. I accept that compliment. Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi, again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.